The Survival Guide to Life, a podcast about how to win in life every second, physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, consistently. So, from the last time, Arno, how's everything been, and has anything new come along?
Well, when you say anything new from the get along thing, I think people now, with all this COVID and people stuck at home, and I think people are just dying to get out, and I'm seeing more people getting tense and, more conflicts happening. And, when you talk about getting along, it's a little trickier right now too. So, the point is, I think you got to have some empathy for people who are, when I say empathy, looking at it from their perspective of, of how things are going, and understand that people are going crazy sometimes staying in. And, from that perspective, I think you got to work a little harder right now getting along with others and making an effort to do that and understanding others and where they're coming from.
Yeah, I couldn't say that in better words. I feel like sometimes it's things that we assume or we presume might be the way it is. But if we went out the way to understand that person, I think then we would come to know that we were wrong in the way of our thinking.
Yeah. And it goes back to perceptions people have about each other. And I think you got to watch out. There's an old saying, you've probably heard this, like, perception is reality, which is not really true, but my perception is your reality. And, how people see you, I may see you in a certain way or the other, and people make up their mind in milliseconds about how they feel about each other.
Yeah. So I guess, especially with what's going on now and, like, the ability not to go out and the ability not to socialize, I think it sorts of puts, like, a short fuse in someone's demeanor. How can one sort of learn or better understand where someone's coming from?
Well, first of all, to better understand where you're coming from, there's an old saying, understand others first before having them understand you. And, it takes a little effort to do that. And the key is, when we talk about perceptions, we're wired to make snap judgments. We're wired for bias. We're wired to make conclusions about people in certain ways. And you need to sometimes take a step back and realize that may not be true about that person. It's like I do this exercise sometimes in my sessions. I'll say, give me stereotypes of men and give me stereotypes of women. And people will list all these stereotypes. And then the question I'll say, well, what's wrong with this? And the answer is none of these might be true at all. But the point is, if you feel that, if I feel like men do this or women do this, I'm going to unconsciously treat them in a certain way because of that. So, like, if I had a guy one time who was trying to sell something to this woman who was the owner of a company, and she had two men who worked with her, and one was sitting on one side of her, one was sitting on the other side of her, and the vendor came in, and when he went to do his sales pitch, he was technically brilliant, he had the right price, he had everything else, but when he did his presentation, he never looked at the woman in charge. He only looked at the men on the side. And so, even though he had the right price, the right product, right everything else, he was a smooth talker, good salesperson. When he walked out, the woman said, thank you very much. But she banged the table and she said, I don't ever want to work with this person ever again. And it wasn't because of his technical stuff. It was because it was because she just didn't like him. It's sort of like an interview when people are interviewing people. The number one thing they look at is, do I want to work with this person for the next 5 years? So, it sort of goes along with that aspect of it. But the key really is, understand others before having them understand you. And what the really key is there, you want to communicate in the ingredients that others find is important and not just what you find is important. And that takes a lot of effort sometimes too. With all the divisions going on in the country and stuff like this, you really got to take a look and, try to take a look at other people's perspectives, don't sweat the small stuff, as I always like to say. And the other thing is, a lot of times we just get into fights and conflicts, where I say, choose your battles wisely. Sometimes people get upset because, let's say it's raining outside and they're all upset about that. Well, if it's raining, it's raining. Or, you know, if somebody cuts you off in traffic, what do? We get all upset. We go crazy. And the other person's just driving away, having a good day. And our day's ruined. So the thing is, you need to, you know, take a good look at it from that point.
Not like letting anyone sort of change your zen or like change your state. How do you sort of not react to a situation in a certain way and sort of really think before you act? You know, like they say it, and it's easy to say, but it's really hard to make that cognizant decision and like put everything before you act.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when you say that, and a lot of people have different methods for that. For example, I meditate every day. And when I say I meditate, I use some, there's a great app on your iPhone you can get called Calm, C-A-L-M. And, you know, I listen to that during the morning. And then when I walk, I walk like every morning usually or sometimes in the evening, depending on my schedule. But, you know, there's an old saying, be present. And, you know, instead of listening to my radio or stuff like that, I'm just focusing on certain things like the birds and the sounds and the people that are out there. And that sort of calms you down in a way too. So when something happens, you know, you don't feel so tense about it and stuff like that. I also think a good thing is, you know, like exercise tends to calm you down in a lot of cases. We said meditation, some people say prayer. A lot of people I've asked, what do they do to alleviate that stress and get into those situations where they, you know, they go crazy when somebody has like a different perspective. And then the other thing is choose your battles wisely. Is it really worth going after this person? Is there anything you can change? If I can't change it, why am I even thinking about it? And, you know, and in some cases too, for people who get all upset about things too, you may want to turn off the news at the end of the day so you can get a good night's sleep, you know, and focus on the good things. But, I would say a lot of that just goes back to, you know, it's a mindset and you've got to work on that through exercise, prayer, meditation. Are all good things that you can actually do in that case. And then again, as I said, choose your battles wisely, and easier said than done. But once you start thinking that way, you start doing it. One other thing I'd mention on that too, is there's a book called One Word. And I don't know if you've read that or not, but the focus of that is you focus on one word for 6 months, for example, and you just do it. So for example, you might say, you know, be happy would be that, or well, that's another one. Let's say gratitude is one. So let's say gratitude is one of your words. And so one of my words was like, gratitude. So what I did is I put that on my calendar every day. I put it on my wall, and that's all I thought about. And what happens is after about 6 months, you know what, you're just showing gratitude for everything that happens. You know, so it's that, or, you know, another one I had was, you know, just do it, which is three words. It's not one word, but, you know, it made me act instead of like, okay, should I call that person? And it's just do it, just do it, just do it. So, you know, these actions happen because of that. So, you know, so maybe focusing on one word to say, you know, like less tense, you know, I'm going to be less tense. I'm going to be less show less anger. I'm going to get less upset. Those are two words, but just look at that every day, or what does it really matter? You know, before you go crazy with somebody on something.
So then I guess it just comes down to being able to actionate or like bring action to these things that we know, or like other components like mindfulness. Now, other than mindfulness and meditation, what would you say are some other key elements of getting along with someone?
Well, when you say about getting along, I would say a key element of this is, you know, as we said before, understand others first before having them understand you. Try to understand and don't jump to conclusions right away. You know, I use an example of this, and I don't mean to get political or anything like that, but there was, I don't know if you remember Colin Kaepernick. He was a football player. And he was kneeling at a football game. And so what did people do? They didn't look at anything about why, they didn't look why he's doing this or not, but they said, okay, it's terrible. It's great. It's terrible. It's great. And they just made instant what? Assumptions, instant judgments on that. And, you know, if you really want to get along, the question I would ask is, okay, before I make any judgments, why is he doing this? Why is the reasoning behind this? To make that happen. And so what this takes the next step when you talk about getting along is really empathy. And empathy is like taking the other person's perspective. putting yourself in their shoes. And by the way, when I say putting yourselves in their shoes, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I understand, but you know, you don't really understand if you haven't been in their shoes or you haven't been in their place. And I would take it a step further too. I would say, before you walk, you know, that you've heard that probably walk a mile in my shoes, but I would say before you walk a mile in my shoes, you need to take off yours first. And this is easier said than done. And so, for example, what I try to do is I try to, you know, like, and I suggest this to my clients too, is, okay, if you want to get a good perspective of things, you know, watch all the different, you know, there's different right wing, left wing, all these middle things, TV thing. Watch all of them and see that, you know, or go to different churches, for example, and understand where people are coming from that aspect. And, you know, and after a while, you see that people aren't that much different in that case. I would also say, you know, to get along too, you got to watch the words you use. Language, you know, what's that say? I always like to say words can hurt. You know, we've heard that thing before, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt. Words can hurt you. And I've seen a lot of people not get along because of that. And I take it a step further. Be sure to taste your words before you spit them out. A lot of people just, you ever seen somebody just go ahead and they just say something and then everybody hates each other for that because they didn't know how to say it or what to say. You know, it's like, you know, you go to somebody and you say, well, you know, it's not personal. Well, of course, when you say it's not personal, it is personal. Yeah. Or, you know, you did a great job, but, you know, when you say, but you just negated everything else. You should say something like, well, you did a great job. And, you know, here's a couple other things that would make it even better in that case that I would look at. So those, you know, or we get sarcastic at somebody. You say, well, that was really funny or something like that. And I don't know about you. I'm a little sarcastic, but have you ever been sarcastic to somebody who didn't get it? And when they don't get it, they hate you forever. We're never going to get along on that case too. And it could be anything else. I mean, it could be the three things I always suggest people stay away from these days are sex, politics, and religion. You know, the three things that just, you sort of bring that up in a conversation. Somebody's on the different side. It's like, you just see immediately they don't discuss things with each other. So, you know, I just say part of the rule book is just don't do that. But that's some of the things that I would say right off the bat. And then I also have a few other things I could share with you, like on the, you know, six, you know, other things like showing appreciation, for example. You know, people, once you show appreciation, people love that. Southwest Airlines, for example, has a 5-to-1 ratio on appreciation. So when somebody, you're supposed to say 5 positive things before you say something that could you do this or that. And when I say appreciation, you know, for teams or leadership people, one thing I was working with a company the other day and I basically said, okay, before you start, the leader had to say 1 positive thing about each person in that room. And it just changed the whole attitude of people in there. So, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. And when I say the words, it's not what you say, it's how you say it that really makes a difference in that case.
Can you give me an example of like choosing your words and how you say it is really critical? And the second part was from the beginning stages of your consulting career to now, what was sort of your mindset on getting along then and it is now?
That's a good question. You know, when I say saying your words, how you say it, it's somebody doesn't say something, say, okay, get your act together, or, you know, which immediately is going to be defensive. Or here's another one. You did this or you did that. As soon as you say you to me, guess what? In that tone, I'm going to become defensive. I'm not going to want to do it. Or like another one, you always do this. You never do this. You know, and so I would say something like, if somebody didn't do something, I use a technique called the USA technique. And I'd say, well, I understand this is important to you, which is what? Showing that I'm listening and I'm caring. However, here's the situation. You know, this is really not maybe appropriate for our place where we're doing this here. And then I'd say, well, and then the A is action or alternative. So why don't we do this? Or why don't you try to say it this way next time? So, you know, it's another way of saying that type of thing. So just to give you an example on that. And then when your next question was, how did I feel about getting along then now? I think I've changed quite a bit because I've been researching this forever, but I was a little worse back then. One thing, I would let things get to me more. And it's, and by the way, this, like, somebody would say something and I would take it as offensive. And, you know, or even let's say somebody cut me off in traffic, I'd get all upset about it and go crazy. And as I said before, when somebody cuts you off in traffic, the driver who cut you off, they're just having a great time. They're driving away. They're singing. They're listening to the radio. And guess what you're doing? You're still having a heart attack about it, and your day is ruined. So one thing that helped me from then and there, and I learned this from somebody else. There was a session I went to. So I'd let it, and he just kept saying, "Let it go, let it go." And I would say this to all your listeners today too. I actually put this on one of my license plates in Virginia here. It said, "Let it go," and that is a big difference for me from the years. And that's what I mean by focusing on one thing at a time. Because you focus on everything. Well, somebody will say, well, how do you get along? Well, here's 20 ways to do it. But, you know, you got to focus on one of those things that are getting in the way and do it. But letting it go is a big difference for me then and now. And I ask myself these questions. Does it really matter? Does anybody really care? Is this going to make a difference in the next 2 days? Am I going to worry about, you know, and then if you start asking those questions, it doesn't really make a difference. Or, like, let's say you're getting on a plane flight and or you're, you know, it's canceled because of a thunderstorm. I've seen people get all mad and upset. Well, you know what? I can't do anything about that. You know, there's a storm is in the way. So I think the difference is, like, letting it go would be a key part that I would say right there makes a difference.
I think then when it comes to really trying to let things go, it really comes down to, or boils down to, one's ego and how one can just leave that at bay. I think for some of us than others, we're so caught up in now and what's going on now, we don't see the bigger picture or see the effects of the cause in the way we react.
Mm-hmm. And when you say your ego, you know, I do a little exercise sometimes and I ask people, I call it your rule book. How is your rule book getting in the way of you being, developing better relationships and connecting with people and getting along better? And when I say about the rule book, I always ask, where are your shoulds and your should nots and your ego getting in the way of you being more effective? Because, you know, we all grow up with, you should do this, or you should do that, or you should do this. And so what happens when people don't do our shoulds and don't follow our guidelines, we don't get along with them. And so we got to realize that, you know, not everybody is in that ballpark. So I think you're right on target there when you talk about ego and your shoulds and your should nots and what's right and what's wrong. And you've got to take a step backwards and say, well, not everybody feels that way. You know, and it's hard. I'm not saying this is easy to do, but, you know, you just got to take a look at some of it.
Then my next question is, like, say someone who was brought up in, like, a nourishing and a very positive environment, and say, whereas the other person was grown up in, like, a very negative environment, one that caused them to have, like, a lot of self-limiting beliefs. How would you sort of differentiate the two's progression in getting along, say, if they were working for the same company and you were hired as a consultant for that company?
First of all, I'd say you're right on target there, because there's an old saying, a child lives what a child learns. And I'm not sure if you've ever seen that poster, but if a child lives with fear, he becomes hostile. If a child lives with fighting parents, he becomes, you know, there's all these things that go with it. And a lot of the ways that people become are the ways they were raised. So, you know, when you were 5 and 6 years old, you get that, you know, you get that ingrained by your parents and your teachers and your ministers and your coaches of how you should act. And then when you get older, you start what? You start portraying those things. And what I tell people who I'm coaching a lot of times is, I say, okay, this is, let me ask what your childhood was like. And just like you said, and they'll give me one way, and I'll say, okay, and they'll use that as an excuse. And I'll say, okay, you're you're 30 years old now, or you're 40 or 50, you know, that's been, that was 20 years ago. So you can keep using that excuse, or you can change. And there's an old saying, change it. If you, what is it? You own it, you change it, you adapt it. So if you know what you're talking about, you can change and then you can adapt. And then if somebody's in a certain way, so for example, somebody's very positive, they're obviously going to grow up in a certain way. They're going to appreciate what people do. They're going to treat them in a certain way. And you're saying if a negative, if somebody's negative there too. And again, it's interesting because a lot of times I work with people who I don't want to call behavioral issues, but who have those kinds of things. And a lot of that is giving them directions on what to do. So for example, I won't mention the company, but I was in a company, I was hired to speak, work with somebody who I was coaching one time, and his behavior, he was technically brilliant. You know, he did every, he was one of the top people in the country on what he did, but he didn't get along with anybody. So the first thing I did is I sort of did something called a 360, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's where I interview people above him, below him, around him. And then I come back and I say, okay, here's what people are saying about you. And they always usually deny it. Well, that's not me. That, well, okay, this is what people are saying. I don't tell them who said it. But then I go in and so if you want to change, every week we're going to work on one. See, I like the word one thing. One thing we're going to do. And are you going to, and I said, are you going to make a commitment to do this or not? And if, first of all, if they say whatever, that is not a good answer. So whatever is a submissive term. So I'm not going to do it. But if they're willing to work, I will work with them on that. And the first, just to give you an example, one of the things I did with somebody who had that negative family and bad behavior, I made him go around and I said, the first thing I want you to do is apologize to everybody in this company who you offended. And he looked at me and he said, well, that's going to be uncomfortable to do that. And I said, well, you know, I'm not here to, you know, we're here to make a change. So what happened, I got him out and he did that and it made a big difference. And so, but people have to be willing to change. And the only person you can change is yourself. And, you know, and the three steps to change, which if you're the negative person, the positive person, you want to change, you first of all need to be aware of the need to change. So maybe you're listening to a podcast like this and saying, okay, I need to do it. The second thing is you need to make a commitment to change. And when I say a commitment, you know, there's an old saying, you do something 21 days in a row, it becomes a habit. So you basically say, okay, for this 21 days, I want you to show appreciation to somebody every day. And at the end of 21 days, it becomes a habit. And then the third thing is action. So what are we going to do? You actually do it and make it happen. So to make that change with the people, sometimes they just need a, and I've coached a number of people this year on that exact thing you're saying it, but you have to take, here's where are you, you've got to find out where they're coming from first, and then you got to develop guidelines and steps. And a lot of these people do need individual coaches. A lot of them are in trouble too. Some of the ones I work with, if they don't get better within a 4-month period, then they're fired too. So even though they're technically great at their jobs, but they have to work on it. So there's an incentive for them to actually do well.
Okay, so I guess in that way they're sort of forced to happen, in a way.
So like, but then again, you know, if they say like I don't think I want to, you know, whatever. If they look like they're not going to do it, I'll go back to the person who's paying me and say, well, you know what, I could do this, but they're not going to make the effort. So, you know, why waste the time and money doing it?
So then I get, I'm sure more is now, it's like more referrals, but sort of when you were starting out your coaching career, sort of how did you like approach or reach out to your like clients?
When I was first starting, I had a background before in like organizational development and coaching and stuff like that, and speaking, and I'd been doing it through my jobs. And then what happened was, and I sort of got lucky because, you know, somebody said, could you speak at a meeting? And I didn't even know that that was a thing people could get hired doing, but I went ahead and I spoke at this meeting, and then somebody liked me at that meeting, and then somebody else liked me at that meeting. And so I sort of got into it from that aspect of it. But to actually get coaching work, you really need, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do these days too. For example, you can go on LinkedIn and actually I try to, you know, when people go on LinkedIn, I don't just say, just click names. I actually try to get in a conversation, find out who they are, what they're doing. And I see if there's anything we can do that's mutually beneficial, whether it's working with them or it's working with people that they refer. And I work right now, besides doing all this, I also have like another website called speakandcoachformoney.com, where I actually work with speakers and trainers and coaches to help them build their businesses. And I work with people from the beginning to all the way out, and sort of sometimes it helps to have a coach like that to help them get on the right track and, you know, line them up and getting coaching opportunities and referrals and connections and stuff like that. But, you know, stuff like you're doing, like with a podcast and getting that out and, you know, having other people send that out. And, you know, you just have to have like visibility these days just to get something going. I would also suggest people write stuff, write articles, you know, and have an e-zine, a newsletter that goes out. Again, a lot of people don't read newsletters, but in the subject line, like I'll put down 8 ways to get along, and somebody will call me and say, hey, you know what? I saw your article, which they didn't even read, but they said, you know, we need some help here. You know, the other thing I would mention too, is to have a tagline. As you know, somebody once gave this to me, like I was speaking at a meeting and somebody was introducing me and they said, and here he is, the get along coach. Somebody else said, here he is. And I never thought of that as the tagline, but as soon as I say that at a party or I meet people, people say, oh, here's the get along. And as soon as they say get along, they always say, oh God, nobody gets along at our office. And then immediately they either hire me to speak, not immediately, but they'll hire me to speak, or they'll coach, or they need some facilitation, you know, on that type of stuff. So that's generally a few ways I would suggest you might want to try.
I guess then when it comes to like the outreach and the LinkedIn messaging, it really critical into your approach and the words you use, right?
Oh yeah. And you know what I do with LinkedIn too? I don't just try to sell things. I think there's too many people try to do direct selling on LinkedIn, and I'll do something when somebody wants to connect with me or I want to connect with them. I'll find out about them, you know, talk about them. And then I'll say, you know, if there's anything we could do, and I like to use this word, that's mutually beneficial, let's talk. And when I say mutually beneficial, that doesn't mean like, okay, I'm just trying to sell you something, you know, on that case, and maybe there's something you can get out of this too. So I bring up that's sort of one of my techniques right there too. And then I always ask, I say, hey, you know, if you know, later on, as I get to know people, I'll say, you know, if you know a company that needs leadership and team development training or coaching, or if you know some people who want to start, build, and grow a speaking training business, or, you know, become an agent for me, for example. You know, I also have like a program where I get people to be agents, where they get a certain percentage of what I do based on their connections, and they're going out and finding me work on that case. And that's worked pretty good too. And I give them a certain percentage of each sale. And, you know, cause everybody likes to have a side gig these days, or a side hustle, or, you know, or something, and they can do fairly well if they have the right connection. And then I just make the sale.
Okay. So then that's interesting along those lines, because I guess, how did you sort of find, it's just goes to, I guess, finding the driven or motivated person that's willing to work on like a commission based.
Yes, exactly. And so here's what I do for that. I just let everybody know. And I have a pretty good track record now too. I have like 3 websites. I've got, you know, at least 600 testimonials. I've got videos. And so, and then I have packages that people can just go to somebody they know and say, hey, would you like this? And so it's like, you know, like for example, I have a program that's a session on it's a leadership, it's a leadership training program that's go 8 modules. And then they can but it's listed. I give them the thing, here you go, take this, just send it to somebody, put your name on the bottom as the contact person. And then if they're interested, send them to me right away. I'll get right to them and I'll call them. But the way I've gotten people is I just ask everybody I know, do you know anybody who might want to be a, you know, independent agent or rep who's maybe looking to make some extra money, maybe looking to make some full-time money if they know a lot of people, you know, and what I do is I try to make it really good for them. I give them like 25% of the first sale. And then if I get more business out of that, because I'm pretty good, there's other services I offer, they continue to get 25%. I say, this is your client, not mine. So I'm not going to steal anything. I'm not going to do this, but you continue to get fees. And for example, one client, I did something where they got me in for one job, but they had a big company and I talked them into like doing the same program over 20 times for different divisions. And they got a piece of each one of those. So, and then I pay them right away too. So it's not, it's, I make it very, I'm trying to be, it's like a very good deal for that because they are in commissions. I want them to get it right away and try to make their life easy and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess like really show the way you're adding value. And I sort of like this way or this strategy of like, it's like the 120 rule. It's like provide $100 worth of value and ask for 20 back. Like who wouldn't do that in that aspect? Then it's like, oh, here's $80 or like here's 100. Can I have 20?
Yeah, exactly. And my thing is, you know, when you talk about working with people too, is give value first and then always ask for the order too. So it's, you know, and I try to give value. So if they have like a, you know, somebody called me the other day who I'm working with and she got me something with another company. And so she's just marketing this out. And so she said, hey, I got these people who are interested. And so I got on the phone within like 10 minutes and called them because I know they were interested. And then I put her on the phone too, but she didn't really know all the stuff I can do because the agents really don't want to know everything in the world that you can do anyway. They'll fall asleep. But so I got on the phone and she listened and we actually closed the deal the other day too. So, but it goes through connections but then you also have to have a lot of credibility too. So, if you want to get these jobs, so for example, I'll let people have a list of here's my last 400 clients with their phone numbers. You can call any one of them to see if I'm good or not. Look in Google, check me out on Google, check this guy out on here. Cause I think people are skeptical these days. And then the other thing I do is like, hey, here's some sample videos. Here's a recording I did on a podcast. You know, see if these things meet what you have and then we'll discuss how we can work together. And like that. And when you say the 120 rule, you know, somebody might say, hey, we want to do this 6 months from now. And I get the contract and they give me a deposit. I'll give that deposit to the agent immediately so that, they don't have to wait the 8 months to get the money. Cause that can be pretty depressing, especially on commission to say, oh, I got to wait 8 months to get this. You know? That's how I work with them. But the agent thing has been working pretty good. There's some people who are doing, I have a few and then I keep asking and I suggest that, but you really have to have like a services and products that really are easy to understand. It's easy to sell because if you don't have that, then it's hard to get agents to do it because they need to have something you can just put away and it's there and it's good. For example, one of the other things I do is license my programs too. So some of my training programs, I give them the slides, I give them all the marketing materials, I give them the outline, I go over it with them and some people want to start their own speaking training business. And so I just actually go through that process besides and give them a program that they can actually start tomorrow if they have a client and they can sell. So there's a lot of different things you have to look at these days.
I guess it then really requires you to have all these different hats on and be able to use them appropriately, especially with what's going on now. It really shows that you can't just have one skill. Rather, you have to be multi-talented and also not learn a skill that can be automated in the future.
Oh, that's excellent. The idea. And, you know, it's funny. I had a meeting the other day with a group of speakers, and these are all top-notch speakers. They've been doing it. And they said, you know, you cannot rely anymore on just having, like, the keynote speaker, you know, or being in the speaking business because you've got to look at the speaking business as one thing you do, but what relates to it. So you know, when you speak, you can also coach. You can also develop ongoing programs. You can do everything virtually or in person. You can offer to license your programs. You can offer to, you know, you can get agents to sell your, well, that's to sell your programs. But what are the other things that you can do that relate to what you're doing right now? So somebody hires me to speak. Well, again, if they hire you to help with their company, well, here's a few ways we can work with you on this. Because, you know, with the internet and with YouTube and all these things that people, everybody goes out there, everybody's speaking. So you have to have other models that are available. I think the total speaker who goes out there and just, unless you're a really big celebrity, the keynote speeches, you will get some of those, but I don't think you can make a living on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's sort of really, you have to know how to manage your multiple streams of income.
Exactly. And, you know, it's, for example, I have one thing that's a customer service makeover. And it's a 14-day program where I charge a certain amount of money. And, you know, you go into a company, you do all sorts of program things with them. And then at the end of 14 days, you come out and say, okay, here's suggestions. And so, you know, it's something that comes because one of my speaking things is that. But I said, okay, people need more than just a speech. They need to know, okay, let's say I did this with a coffee shop a while ago, and we did everything from interviewing people to looking at all their processes to some surveys to this. And then at the end, I actually did a presentation for them on, okay, here's how to be better at customer service. And here's the findings I found. And here's the strategies you need to follow. So we went from that aspect.
Then I guess as like a coach or as a strategist, how do you sort of remain patient or stay patient when trying to develop these skills in other people?
Well, when you say develop the skills, I think I'm not sure if you're saying, you know, for getting along. Yeah. To stay patient with that. One of the things I do on a lot of that stuff is I really need to, again, you need to be patient, first of all. I think you got to realize a lot of people don't know everything you know, and you see people getting, you know, you've just got to have that as a mindset to be patient on that. But I mean, to answer your question, I think that's a mindset that you have and something you have to work on because, you know, somebody will ask me the same question four times, but then I got to put myself, hey, look, when I was in their shoes, I didn't know any of this stuff either. So it takes time. And I think that's a virtue. I mean, not everybody is patient. And I think if you are, that's a skill that you have to develop in yourself. But I just look at it that, look, here's somebody brand new coming in. They want to be a speaker, for example, or get along, let's say, and they have a problem with it. And especially if they're coming to me to solve it, I'm going to talk through it with them. I'm going to listen. I think you've got to be an active listener there too. You also can't show any nonverbal cues that show, you know, like you're shifting your eyes or, you know, doing sighs or something like that. You got to get rid of those things. To really go back to it, it really depends on each person. Some people aren't cut out for doing this either because they aren't patient. And as soon as I get impatient with somebody, you know, there's a good chance they may not want to use you again.
It really goes to remaining professional, right? When in the workplace and like actioning your own processes. But how do you sort of like deal with the situation or like respond to it critically when someone is like trying to press your buttons or like purposely trying to, annoy you?
Oh, if they're purposely trying to annoy me, what I do on that case is, you know, it is how you talk to them in a certain way. So if they're trying to annoy me in a certain way, I might start with that USA technique I used before on difficult conversations. You know, how to say no in a nice way, or how to confront them in a nice way. And so, let's say somebody's like a bully, or they're getting on my case, or something like that. I'll start off, I'll say, like, let's say their name's Jim. I'll say, Jim, you know, I understand, and I'll say their name a few times too, because if they keep going on and on and on, the only way to interrupt them sometimes is to use a name. I don't, if you ever read Dale Carnegie's book on how to win friends and influence people, he says the most important thing to anybody is their name. So I would say, Jim, you know, I understand you have a concern about this, or I might say I feel too. I could say I understand, or Jim, I feel concerned when you are attacking me or suggesting that I do this. And here's the situation. I don't know why you're doing this. I don't know what the situation, you know, why, what the reasoning is behind this. Can you share with me what, you know, why you're saying this? And then I'll say, you know, what do you think we should do at this point? So I'll use a technique like that. I'll also use stuff like, you know, I feel concerned when you say this because, you know, it hurts our cooperation. We're not going to be able to work together. And so I start out with, I feel sometimes, you know, I never try to attack the person. Because when you say you, or you did this, or you never, or you stuff like that, it just gets people more defensive. So I'll say, I feel concerned when you, and I give them what they're doing, because, and then I'll give them the, because why this is important. And then I'll say, well, what do you think? And then move from there.
Okay. So then, with that and being around coworkers, how do you sort of get, or what is like the components of getting like your coworkers to sing your praise?
Oh, to sing my praises. Well, when you talk about coworkers to sing your praises, I would say there's, excuse me, I would say there's a few things you can do that. And the first thing is, and let me give you some keys to get along with and getting people to sing your praise. The first one is attitude. And when I mean attitude, a lot of times we're in a bad mood. So if you ever come into work as in a bad mood or something like this, people are going to start just, you know, people just get up. You start treating people the worst way. And one thing I would say about attitude is two things to keep your attitude adjusted at all times. And when I say keep your attitude, one is called the flip side exercise. And this exercise is where you look at the best thing no matter what. So let's say you hated your job. Well, the flip side of that is at least you have a job. You know, you can look at it at that point. Or let's say you put a dent in your new car. Well, you know, the flip side of that is, well, at least it's going to happen sometime, so I got over it. I mean, these are some things. So you look at the best side of anything. And I used this with one company a long time ago, and we had 64% less complaints. I gave this, everybody list had a black book, and in it they had to write the flip side. And so after a while, they got used to, you know, here's the good side of everything. And we had like a lot less complaints from passengers and customers because of that. Second thing on attitude is count your blessings, and to keep your attitude adjusted, I always ask, what are you grateful for at this moment? So when something's going wrong, I always say, okay, what am I grateful for at this moment? So somebody's yelling at me. Okay, you know what? I'm living. I can walk. I can talk. I can eat. I'm looking at the positive things. So first thing is attitude, and two things to help you keep it adjusted. Look at the flip side exercise. Do that. And then count your blessings and ask yourself that question. What am I grateful for at this moment? Second thing, get everybody saying be reliable. And I'm just going to run through these a little bit, but do what you say you're going to do. Do it when you say you're going to do it. Do it right the first time. Get it done on time. These are all things that if you don't do them, people get upset at you. Third thing is be responsive. That means accessible. That means willing to help. That means going above and beyond. And by the way, going above and beyond, giving those extra things that people don't expect, they love you because of that. The fourth thing is being credible. And when I say credible, I mean by that is the trust. I mean, you've got to have integrity and you got to have trust. There's an old saying, it takes years to build and seconds to break. And as soon as somebody doesn't trust somebody, nothing gets done anymore. Nobody talks to you in those areas. And so you need to look at that aspect of it in those cases. And then the last two things I would say is appearance. The old saying, don't judge a book by its cover, but what everybody does, they still judge a book by its cover. So be appropriate to the situation you're in. And as we said before, perception is not my perception is not reality, but my perception is your reality. So how you come across, you know, in the meetings or wherever you're at, people are going to judge you by that. And the last thing we talked about earlier was empathy. And when I say about empathy, you know, try to find the other person's perspective. And as we said earlier, before you walk a mile in my shoes, you need to take off yours first. So just those are six key things to get people singing your praises. And if you do them, you'll get along a lot better with everyone.
Okay, so I like that, and I'm gonna have to give a try myself. Now, I guess say Arnold, a year from now or 2 years from now, you stumble across this video and you're watching it. Say you want to say something to your future self or sort of manifest something. What do you want to tell future Arnold?
The future Arnold, I would say. My future Arnold would be, as I was looking at this video again, first of all, I'd look at it and say, am I actually doing all these things that I said to do? You know, there's an old saying too, that, it's nice that I always tell people this too. You know, you may have known this stuff, but the question is, are you doing it? I think a lot of times we become complacent because I talk to this with salespeople too. You know, they're sales slumps. And I say, well, why is there a sales slump? And they said, what did you used to do like 5 years ago when you were hot? And you know what they start? They stop doing those things. So as I look at this again, I review this. And the nice thing is I do these programs all through the year and I work with people. And it keeps reminding me stuff. And a lot of times, I hate to say it, some of these things I look at and I say, you know what? I haven't been doing that. You know, why did I get upset the other day when that person cut me off? I'm not following the flip side exercise. Would be one of those things. So I guess the future is to review this, keep looking at these things, and it's not that you know it, but are you doing it? That's the real factor, right?
So the really wise words. I guess next is two truths and one lie. So you can tell me any two truths and one lie, and I have to guess which one's the lie.
Truths and one lie. Okay. Two truths. You know, I've been a private pilot. I've kayaked major rivers, and I have climbed up to Mount Everest.
The private pilot is the lie.
No, I actually was a private pilot, so that's the truth. I was like. The lie was Everest, but I used to fly little planes, so it's like, and to do that until I almost crashed. And I said, you know what, maybe I should give this up. So yeah, it's better just to be on these podcasts instead of flying anymore. So you learn quickly when you get a scary situation, you know what, is it really worth it? Right. So you tell yourself that. That's a good question. No, I was alone on the flight, and I was coming in a little too high on the flight path, and I came in too high, and I was almost, and I should have gone around, you know, where you fly off again, but I said, okay, I'm just going to try to get on there, and I was coming to the end of the runway when then there's a river at the end of the runway, so I slammed on the brakes, and I broke the nose wheel and all sorts of stuff, and the wheels broke, the whole thing broke, and at that point, I thought, okay, I could be killed doing this stuff. So you just got to watch it. Or you'd fly with people and, you know, you'd go to the beach and you'd take a few people with you. And when it was time to go, they all say, oh, let's go back. And I said, you know what? There's clouds and it's bad weather and we're going to have to stay. And they're all getting on my case. And I said, this is not a 747. This is a small plane and we could get killed. And nobody wants to, you know, they, you know how people just want to go when they want to go, you know, they're used to a big plane where you can go. My plane, you had to have good weather to go or else you die. So that was that's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess now the last thing, if you can, end or send us off with a quote that's sort of been resonating with you recently.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you think of a quote. I'm just trying to think of one that I like here, and one that that really hits me is I like a quote by Mahatma Gandhi, and he said this. He said, "The best people are those tend to be nurturers. When the people that get along the best tend to be nurturers, and they have a number of constituencies. You have your coworkers, your employees, your customers, your bosses, your family, and friends." And he said this. He said, "Everyone is like a plant in the garden." And he said, if you don't water and feed them, they're not going to grow. And if I can remember this correctly, he said this. He said, keep your thoughts positive because your thoughts become your words. Keep your words positive because your words become your actions. Keep your actions positive because your actions become your habits. Guard your habits and keep them positive because your habits become your values. Keep your values positive because your values become your destiny. And he said, remember that every day is a new beginning. And we must always remember that the nurtured seed always produces the abundant harvest. So it's sort of, and by the way, if anybody ever wants that, I can share that with them. But I actually keep that because it makes a sense that, you know, to have that abundant harvest, you need to continue to plant seeds all the time with people, with situations, with the services you do. And it always works. So that's what I'd leave you with.
First time somebody related that to me, and really wise words, and it really shed some deep insight, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you coming on the show again.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.